his power to stretch. The thing with the strength of 1,000 men. Johnny, flame on, Torch, and Sue, the invisible girl. The Fantastic Four, united in their fight against interplanetary evil. Fantastic.
We must prepare for Galactus.
Do you prepare him? I'm for Cloud.
Sustain me. I shall drain it.
There are billions of living beings on this earth.
Their fate can be no concern of Galactus.
We'll make it your concern.
Ben!
Good. My herald, the Silver Surfer, is always at my point of landing. This is strange.
He's signaling his sphere. We've got to stop him.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Third Degree Burn. I'm your host this evening, Kirk Greenfield, and I'm joined with the usual cast of characters. We're going to introduce them before we talk about what our topic is. First, we have from Texas, Brian Hughes.
Hey!
And Tim Elliott is out in L.A., I believe. Sorry, Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Hello.
And joining us from Japan, I believe we have Nigel Spink.
Hello there.
So we have four panelists today, and
actually,
we've assembled...
Actually, you got five, Kirk.
Oh? Who's it? Who else is here?
Chris Hughes.
Okay, thank you. I didn't see you. I hadn't heard you. So Chris is joining in also from Texas. Great. Five panelists then. And the topic for tonight, I can't make my four panelists Fantastic Four joke now, but that's okay. We have four fantastic panelists joining me. And we're talking about the Fantastic Four movie and also some of the latest thoughts as far as John Byrne news from the web, the interwebs, and what have you. What's your pleasure, gentlemen? What do you want to discuss first?
Let Brian, because Brian kind of spearheaded this. I guess the big news about Elsewhen. You want to let us know what that's going on with that, Brian?
Yeah, at San Diego Comic Con, the Abrams panel, when they came up, they announced that X-Men Elsewhen is going to be published by them for Marvel, starting in April of 2026. And they're going to put all 32 issues in a combined three volumes, each one being about 250 pages, written, of course, and penciled by John Byrne. Some of it inked by John Byrne, the rest of it inked by Paul Wills. Now, Paul was a regular on Byrne's website, burnrobotics.com. And so when Byrne was putting the stories out there, he would go in and ink specific pages. There was an actual form out there for inking of Elsewhen. And somehow in all that, he's the one that got picked to do the rest of the inking. So there's going to be three books come out, hardback books with dust covers. And all this was put together by Chris Rial, who's like editor-in-chief, I guess, there at Abrams. And so he just, got everything together. He worked a deal with C.B. Cebulski at Marvel so that they could use the characters. And bam, we've got it coming. Now, there's going to be, he's not really completing the stories at the end of issue 32. He's just going to have a wrap-up that he's written, text, kind of like what he did for the last Galactus story. So, but what this means is we're getting Elsewhen put out the way it should look, the way it should be. And it starts coming in April, and I think it's going to be $39.99 regular retail for each one of the books as they come out. I'm excited.
This being in continuity, however you approach this.
No, this, if you listen to the episodes that we did way back when Elsewhen came out, it picks up from Phoenix, the Untold Story, which was the original way that they were going to end the Phoenix saga, where Jean Grey wasn't, killed, or Phoenix wasn't killed there on the Blue Ray of the Moon.
It's kind of basically, isn't it, his idea of if he hadn't left the book, kind of how he would have carried on.
Kind of, but you know, it's been updated and peppered by, you know, 30,
Yeah.
40, 50 years of, you know, thinking about it and everything. So yeah, he's, you know, added a bunch of, you know, a lot of different storylines in there,
He's pulled
new
from hidden years.
characters.
He's pulling from hidden years and
From Hidden Years and other places, and of course, a lot of Sentinel stuff and Avengers, Fantastic Four guest starring. This is going to be, it's going to look great. I'm excited. Paul Wills is an excellent anchor for it, along with Byrne doing whatever he's going to do with it. So yeah, that's what's coming, and whoo,
Is it
I'm
going to be
excited.
oversized like the omnibus or just
No, actually, it's going to be smaller. It's going to be like 11 by 7.5.
Oh.
So you know that DC Universe by John Byrne book that came out that was about 400 pages, a hardback. We actually found it at Ollie's for like $10 at one point. It's about that size.
Okay, that's a nice size though.
Yeah.
About the size of a typewriter sheet of paper, or now they're calling it printer paper.
Right.
I suppose. I suppose.
Or
Roughly.
I think it's A1.
Anyway, it's something to be excited for, and you know, I mean, you can actually pre-order it if it hasn't sold out from all the sites that had pre-orders set up. Abrams had their own, and that sold out. I know that Amazon had it available. Mile High Comics. I'm sure that whatever Lone Star is that what Lone Star is now?
They
Mile High, or
are
is that Wild
no.
West?
Mile High is separate, but Lone Star is my comic shop or something like that.
Yeah, oh, that's right, mycomicshop.com. And I mean, we should be able to order it from our local comic book shop, Collected.
But it's next year,
So
right? It's not coming out till 2026.
April. Yeah, April's the first volume.
It'll get reprinted. If it's sold out that fast, it'll get reprinted.
Oh yeah.
I pre-ordered it yesterday on the Japanese Amazon.
And if you pre-order it, you get it for like $3 cheaper, it seems, like $36.99. Something
Yeah,
like that.
well, I was looking, it was on for about 6,500 yen, which, well, when I converted it, based on the rate of the dollar against the yen at the moment, it's a little higher than it should be, but can't do anything about that.
Those darn paper tariffs.
I expected it to be dearer somehow. It's about 1,000 more than it ought to be for its, for the price. But things
I'm
could
wondering
change
if,
before it actually
yeah,
comes
it
out.
could drop.
And
And I'm sure there'll be a digital option if you want to get like the Kindle or the
yeah, there is going to be
some. Oh,
a
there
digital
was,
option.
yeah, but no, I want the book.
I want both.
I'm wondering if perhaps I should talk to David before saying anything here, but to see if he's going to be stocking it or if he's going to be able to make a group purchase for us. Because I'd like he's been very generous to us, and I'd kind of like to give him some business.
Well, and he's opening up his brick and mortar shop here real soon.
Okay.
The Comic Ferret is going to be an actual physical store.
All right.
Not just on the online, but I guess I'll be doing that
Yeah.
as well. So if I want to retire and move back up to Minnesota, I could work in the store.
There you go.
There you go.
And we
There's
wish
too many
him.
down here.
We wish him all the luck in the world. I know it's rough trying to open up in this day and age to open up a brick and mortar store.
Yeah, but you guys saw when you came here to Texas, there's comic book shops everywhere. There's got to be a market for it somehow.
There must be in
And
certain areas. There's not a lot here. Here in Vegas, we've got one or two.
that just doesn't make any sense to me.
I have no idea why there's such a massive market here in Texas.
Well,
Because I've like tried to talk with people my age about comics, and like half of them, and not even half, very little know anything about any comics at all.
That's and if you remember, as we went to each store, they diversified in so many areas, games of so many different types, card games and
They have
such.
to. They have to
They
stay
have to
alive.
diversify because you can't. Well, that's not true. There is one shop we went to that was straight up just comics.
Which one was that?
I can't remember the name. Remember the guy? He had long hair. We bought Absolute Batman number one there, and we bought one of the variant covers that
Was that
was.
181 or 150? I forget.
No, but we went there, and it was just straight up comics only, nothing else. I didn't even see a Funko Pop.
Or statues,
Well, that's the other thing that keeps those places afloat, Funko Pops.
Well, I'd heard that you have to be diversified in today's marketplace to have more than one product so that you can have crossbreeding, cross-pollinization between different audiences, and that otherwise you'll see a quick rise and fall in terms of business. But I can't describe the model for you, except in my experience, all the comic shops, and we used to have a whole lot of them in the Detroit suburbs back in the 80s, they've all changed hands and or changed names. None of them, I think, still exist. So, that's 30 years ago, and things change, come and go. But I think it's an interesting marketplace, and I'd love to see somebody do an analysis at some point of how that works or how retailers survive and what they have to
Well, it
choose to
depends on
do.
what. I mean, look at the kind of stuff you see at Barnes and Noble. They have games, they've got Funko, they got Legos, they've got
And they've got all the graphic novels, all the trade paperbacks. They even at times carry omnibus.
Yeah, but even for them, that area is shrinking because manga has taken up so much of it now. Manga has exploded, and your graphic novels are maybe two bookcases.
I mean, I buy a lot of manga in particular, and I mean, some of the manga they've got there is amazing in its storytelling. I mean, they even have DC manga now. They have like a Superman manga or a Batman manga or a Joker manga right now. They had a Deadpool manga, which was really fun. It even had All Might in it from My Hero, which was funny, and it was kind of cool.
Cross-pollination,
It's
that's
kind of cool.
yeah.
But I mean,
But our kids, I mean, and again, you're 18, but our kids your age or younger, are they Where is their eye going? Is it going to manga? Is it going to that? Or is it just going away from that altogether because it's,
they don't like to read.
yeah, that's my point.
TikTok.
They don't.
It's TikTok.
No, because like I even read comics on TikTok. Like people will post comic books on TikTok, and I will spend my time going and reading through them.
I honestly think manga is it's the storytelling. I think it's at this point it's just better storytelling than what's in current the big two, DC and Marvel, than what they're
I
putting
would
out.
agree. I would agree if Absolute didn't exist, or the black labels didn't exist for DC, or the Ultimates didn't exist for Marvel. Because what we've gotten in the new Ultimates storyline is so much better than what you're going to get. And like with Wolverine and with Spider-Man, with the Ultimates, so much better than what we're getting in mainline 616 with Spider-Man and with Wolverine right now. Because they need to do a reset. And they're taking their sweet time doing it. Because the current Spider-Man run that's been going on for the past 5 years sucks. It's booty. I hate it. And with DC, they had their Dark Crisis, which was actually pretty good. They've done the Godzilla Kong Justice League crossover, which was also really good, surprisingly good. But
Yeah, I'll agree. I agree with that. I read the first issue, and I actually can't wait to read the rest of it.
yeah, and then the new DC Absolutes are phenomenal.
Of
Each
which,
one.
those of you that came to Texas, you guys got a copy of each of those, didn't you? Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman number one.
Yeah, and I mean, they also have Martian Manhunter Flash and Green Lantern now, and they're coming out with even more that I'm unaware of because I haven't gone to the comic shop lately. But I've been keeping up with reading them. And I mean, like Absolute Batman, it's surprising me more and more, but in a good way. It's showing a side of Batman I haven't seen quite often. But I mean, comics storytelling is still, in my opinion, a lot better. Because you're never going to be able to get anything like you do with the compact editions. I mean, Kingdom Come, Superman, Birthright, then there's also, All-Star Superman. I mean, those are some of the most premier stories in comics than what you get with Batman Hush, Court of the Owls, and the compact editions just sell. They're $10, which is just as much as a manga.
Arkham Asylum is going to compact edition
But you get the full story instead
September.
of having to buy multiple volumes
Yeah.
of whatever manga you get. And I mean, well, I like My Hero to a degree. I liked Solo Leveling, which is another manga that was really popular. Their storytelling is a lot more linear and not as deep as most comics, I'd say. You'll never get anything in manga like The Watchmen. You'll never get anything in manga like
I'm going to derail you right now
The New
and change
Frontier.
subjects back to something else that is important. DC's putting out an absolute edition of The Man of Steel, John Byrne's The Man of Steel. And so that really should be quite nice. Actually, I've got the absolute all Watchmen and absolute Kingdom Come that my family just bought me not too long ago, and those are really awesome. So
Heck yeah, man.
I'm looking forward to Absolute Man of Steel, and that should be, well, I think, early next year.
Well, I
That being
think
said, go ahead.
this summer we're blessed with having not only the Man of Steel on the big silver screen, but there's also not quite a response, but a competing movie that Marvel has put out, and that's one of the reasons why we're gathered here tonight to discuss, since all of us that have attended, I'm sorry. All of us that are here on the call have seen the Fantastic Four, and so we're going to warn folks the from here on out there are going to be spoilers. There's no way to avoid them. So if you have not already seen the Fantastic Four movie, you may want to pause this and come back after you've watched it because we're going to spoil it for you. Anybody want to tell us your general reaction to the movie?
Well, Kirk, why don't you
Well,
let's do a round table like we did you, since you
yeah.
started, Kirk. Give us your impressions and let's go around the table here.
Okay. Well, very briefly, I liked it. I thought that it was a very stylish 1950s, 1960s look at the public embracing superheroes. The emphasis was on family, and I think that was a different approach. I think it worked. I loved Galactus's images. I wasn't sure if I was going to like a female Silver Surfer, but I believe they pulled it off. It made sense. The story beats were there. I was a little surprised to see that they went with the big storyline right out of the gate. I was very nervous about that, but I think they pulled it off. I don't understand how this movie ties in with the preview that we got at the end of the Thunderbolts movie. But that's okay. That may be answered down the road someplace else. In general, I like this picture. I thought it worked. I think most of the responses I'm seeing online are people cheering for it. Those that are saying nay wanted something else, and they will never be satisfied unless they get their version of the FF on the silver screen. And there have been a lot of versions over the years, folks. Brian, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I thought that the aesthetic of it was really cool. Very Tomorrowland, 60s futuristic. It just the whole look of it was really cool. I too did not have any trouble with Shalabal Baal being the Silver Surfer because it worked well with the plot. Just like I didn't have any trouble with the way that they kind of changed the background on Johnny and Susan, so they weren't just tag-alongs on the ride on the ship, that they actually had a reason to be there. Beyond that, I mean, there was so much Kirby feel and even Byrne feel, especially where the Invisible Woman was concerned. I just really enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed Superman. So I both of them just really made this a good summer movie-wise for me. Oh, and I was glad they brought back Herbie. the way that they used him.
Who'd like to go next, Chris or Tim?
Tim, you go.
Okay. Well, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I'll say I liked it better than Superman. Most of my problems with it are nitpicks. Overall, I don't have any big problems with it other than the female Silver Surfer, in that if they were going to use a female Herald, why not use Frankie Ray and make her Nova? So you still have the connection with Johnny. You can still have the same kind of backstory. But now if for some reason, whatever happens to, you know, her at the end of this film, if in the future, if Galactus comes back, we could get Norn Rad. Maybe he's an, you know, so you're not going to get two silver, you know, he doesn't, you know, when Galactus creates a Herald, he doesn't ever give them the same power twice. It's always some different power. So that way would open the door for, oh, well now, you know, Nova has died or whatever. Now we've got Norn Rad. So that would satisfy, I think, everybody. I agree with you, Brian. I think the making it in the 60s was smart, and I like the look of it, the kind of retro, analog, futuristic 60s feel. It could have been a little more Kirby, especially with Galactus. I thought his home, his ship, or his homeworld, whatever we're calling it,
Tatu
was looked. I've heard it described as being Geiger-like, and I agree with that. I think that should have been just slathered with Kirby tech. It shouldn't have looked like a big kind of dark, some kind of industrial complex. It should just been Kirby tech, wall to wall. But that might interfere with them making Galactus a little darker. You know, he wasn't very bright colored. He was, the colors are right, but he looked very kind of mechanical, and his face had a weird, almost crosshatch kind of a texture to it. Like, I don't know what was going on there. But overall, I liked it. Like I said, I liked it better than Superman. I do like the theme of family. I wish Reed would have been a little more assertive. He seemed a little timid. And the other thing is, again, it's a nitpick, is I wish they had done something to the thing's voice. Lower it, you know, make it a little gravelly, something like that. He seemed a little too mild in his voice.
I did a little bit of, you know, background on that, just because I was like, you know, what was the idea initially? Now, the cartoon is the first one to sit there and make Ben have that gravelly kind of, you know, voice. But Stan had said that it was just, you know, Jack's voice. It wasn't modified or anything. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, that's just something that kind of happened over the years. But what we got was what was originally intended.
Yeah, again, that's, you know, I've got a lot of nitpicks with the film. I don't have any big problems. That's just one of them, that it's fine the way it is. I just wish they had done this other thing.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was Galactus that, Chris gets it. Chris needs to talk.
No, Nigel.
And Nigel, and Nigel. Nigel too.
Yep.
Nigel, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think Tim's basically just said everything that I would probably be about to say. It's a case of, like, as he said, yeah. I enjoyed watching the film. I like the sort of the retro 60s look of Manhattan and everything. That was good. Again, as we've said, the emphasis was on families. And it worked. Yeah, it definitely had me. It brought back the nostalgia of reading the Kirby Lee Fantastic Four stories, you know, the early stories, the way they interacted with one another. Yeah. So that was good. That was like FF. Galactus looked very good. Yeah. We got the look of Galactus rather than a cloud. Like Tim said, I'm the same about, I mean, I got used to the female Silver Surfer during the film. I thought, well, yeah, they're playing their part, you know. and it fitted in with the storyline. It was a bit of a surprise. I didn't expect the Silver Surfer to come to the rescue at the end there until it was actually happening. Because, like, Johnny was more or less getting ready to, spoilers here, getting ready to commit suicide to try and save the day. And then all of a sudden, of course, the Surfer dives in and stops him from doing that. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'd almost forgotten that she was still there, you know, because she'd not been seen for a while on the film.
Yeah.
So that was a good... that was a good little bit at the end because, as I said, that was a surprise when they supposedly got rid of Galactus. And then all of a sudden he started to kind of try and crawl his way back out of that warp hole. And I thought, oh, didn't expect this. What's going to happen next? Is he coming back? Yeah. So that was a good finish. Yeah. Franklin was great. that baby was ace. Yeah. I've never seen a baby act so well, as it were. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. As Tim says, though, there's plenty of nitpicks that I've got. And, Tim, you mentioned one I was going to mention about Reed Richards. As I said, before we saw the film and that, I was a bit wary about whether I was going to like Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards. But from what I'd seen in the clips, I thought, well, you know, it seems okay. It just depends how he's going to act throughout the whole film. And, yeah, sometimes he said the kind of things you'd expect Reed to say, and he did the kind of things you'd expect Reed to say. But it sort of fell short somehow. He wasn't Reed Richards-y enough for me. He seemed to not be confident enough as Reed Richards about his ideas. You know, it was always, well, we'll try this, but I don't know where it'll... Well, Reed wouldn't be like that. He'd be like, you know, we got to do this. This is what we're going to do because this is going to work. And, you know, just before I went to see it, I'd listened to that story time with the Fantastic Four story we did from 250.
Yeah.
And just listening to how Reed talks and comes to his conclusions in that, I thought, no, it should be more like that Reed Richards than this one, who seemed to doubt that things were going to work. And he needed Sue all the time to say, yeah, we're going to be okay. And that's not what I'm used to. Reed is the guy, like, you know, he's the leader.
That the reason why we got that was because of Pedro Pascal and his own personal social anxiety issues.
Right.
And so he was using that within the character, because usually when you see people that have that level of intelligence, whether it's Asperger's or something else, they do suffer from, you know, other things that make them awkward, you know.
Yeah.
So I let that happen, you know, in my mind as I was watching the movie.
Mm-hmm. He seemed to be very underpowered too. He kind of just stretched. He didn't form himself into shapes and even when Galactus was stretching him, he wasn't being stretched that far, but it seemed to be very painful to him. So they nerfed his power so much.
Yeah, he didn't have as much stretching, but
I mean, they really nerfed. We gotta let Chris talk, but Nigel, do you have anything else you wanted to add?
Well, yeah, I was just gonna say, but yeah, overall, I enjoyed it, and it must have had some effect on me now, because when I go into the kitchen to make meals now, I start by saying, "Okay, what's it gonna be today?" and start talking to Herbie. So the thing was good. Yeah, I liked his dialogue, but. Yeah, as Tim says, I was just thinking that we could have done with the visuals being the same, but have Michael Chiklis doing the voice, you know, like James Earl Jones used to be Darth Vader.
Or just ask the actor the actor to kind of lower his voice a bit. Or
we should have had Chiklis as the voice of the thing. Yeah. Yeah, because although he said a lot of things that the Thing would probably say, sometimes he still wasn't Thing enough for me. Like, he was too friendly with Johnny all the time. I mean, those two would tend to fight, don't they, in the comics. And, yeah, or at least just have playful banter and fight.
There was an interplay of that.
Why
was the love interest, and I know the actress, I can't think of her name.
Oh, yeah.
Why was that not Alicia? Yeah, make that Alicia.
And for what we saw, I don't see why they needed to bother going there, other than apparently that character was sort of a tribute to Jack Kirby's wife, apparently.
Oh.
Roz.
Yeah. And that's it, really. That was the only connection. Oh, and I didn't like the beard.
Yeah, I thought the beard was silly.
That was stupid.
That was stupid.
I agree,
I don't know if they've ever done it in the comic, because I've not read an up-to-date FF for years and years and years, but I thought, no, whose stupid idea was that?
There was a comic where I did see that it showed where Thing would only age every year. He'd get to be Ben Grimm for like a week, just a normal human self. So over the course of thousands and thousands of years, he finally aged up to where he was old enough to actually pass away. And in that comic, he had a beard.
Oh, okay.
Well, they also missed out on Pedro should have shaved, so he was clean shaven. Then we could have got the "I've worked all night in my lab, read 5 o'clock shadow" that Kirby always showed, you know.
But that was, wasn't that? So that was something to do with Pedro Pascal saying when he saw himself in the Wonder Woman film when he was clean shaven and he hated it. So he said he'd never be clean shaven again.
Well, the only time that I recall we saw Reed develop 5 o'clock shadow was in the original Galactus trilogy, you know, FF 48, 49, 50. And that appearing, well, it may have happened later on, but I don't recall it happening before that until much, much, you know, decades later when he went away, he lived in a cave, he came back with a full beard, you know, that sort of thing. But it was, I want to say, shocking as this story was coming out to see Reed with 5 o'clock shadow, because it emphasized how hard he was working and how he wasn't taking any time. And it led directly into a family bathroom scene where Ben is bathing, Reed is shaving, and Johnny's getting irritated that they're taking a break instead of attacking the problem. So in the comic I'm talking about here.
So
it kind of worked, as I recall. But the appearance of the 5 o'clock shadow was something that Kirby drew and that the subsequent inker kept. That would have been sent on, and he kept it, and he emphasized it, and he made it look even more natural and real. It looked very much real to me. Sorry, Chris, I didn't mean to step on your toes.
Oh, no, it's cool. Okay, yep. I think I'm going to be a bit controversial here. I liked the movie. I didn't think it was. It felt a little underwhelming in a lot of parts to me. I liked Ralph Ineson as Galactus. I thought Galactus was super two-dimensional. I had nothing to care for in his character. I did not want to see him released from his hunger. I had no reason to want to see him end his suffering. I just wanted him to kind of keep going as Galactus. I didn't want to see anything happen to Franklin Richards. I thought seeing the people get that way with the Fantastic Four being like, sacrifice your child and save us. I thought that was... mildly unrealistic, because why weren't there more people going against it?
Especially why wouldn't anybody come into Franklin's defense?
And no one put themselves in the position of the parents, or you know, Susan Storm or Reed. I mean, that just felt off. I didn't like that. I couldn't sit there and watch that and actually keep a smile on my face, because it shows humanity at a level of depravity that we really aren't at. I don't think we're that off.
No, no, we're still like the guys in Spider-Man, you know. If you,
yeah,
you know,
if I mean, these guys have stained the people so many times, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. You got to give them an opportunity, a chance. But they didn't. They just straight up said, frick you and your child.
Well, they are you saying that that's less realistic than everybody turning on Superman within 8 seconds of that broadcast in the Superman film? They turn much quicker than that.
Right, and Spider-Man did it as well.
No, some people did, but yeah. You had people like the falafel guy who didn't. But we didn't see any of that within Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
We didn't see that. We didn't see
people saying that they should sacrifice their kid.
Yeah, which that didn't happen in this
movie. Reed should have just kept his mouth shut and just said, we went up there, we tried to negotiate, it didn't work. Don't tell him that he asked for your kid and he'd leave everybody alone.
But then that would come out later, and then that would really turn everybody, a lot of people against them.
You'd have the same results, you know. I think the inclusion of Franklin was a mistake.
I think there's just a bigger problem there, and that is what is Galactus's motive, even more so. I mean, I'm not a prominent Fantastic Four reader, so there's probably things that you guys know that I don't know that may be coming in the future. But even so, the fact that I don't know any motive makes it less intriguing to me. And I don't care for Galactus, which just makes me sad because I like the idea of what Galactus should be.
Yeah, I agree. His motivation to quit I thought was silly. That he wanted to...
And
so they could have eliminated that.
Really bothered me into the sense of the plot. I didn't care for it as much because of that. And I was particularly underwhelmed, and I told my father about this as soon as we exited the theater, by the clobbering time. when he said the line, I was like, that was underwhelming. And it didn't sound right. And I can agree with y'all, and it doesn't sound right. But then again, I've been spoiled as of lately because I play Marvel Rivals. And I play the Thing in that game, and the way he says it in that game is perfect. It sounds awesome. Every time he says it, I feel that nice little shake in my bones and that scratch on my brain that I like. It scratches an itch that I can't reach. But this movie particularly failed on that. One thing it did do that I really liked, though, was its recharacterization of Johnny.
Yes.
His love for space was really deep, and I just like Joseph Quinn anyways. So adding his performance and his characterization of him onto that already kind of new idea was really nice. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that a lot. And Reed did exactly like I said he would right before when we did the Before Thoughts podcast. He did the same thing that every man who is the smartest man in the world does, and that is he puts the world on his shoulders. And, you know, that's something that I called was going to happen. And even so, he did deliver a performance that surprised me in a lot of ways, especially with how he kept his brain kept going to the worst possible scenario. I like that. We don't get to see that a lot more with the smartest men stereotypes or the smartest man in the room stereotypes. Doesn't happen a lot, which I thought was fun, and it added a layer that I was excited to see. Still, Dad, can I just say, before we went and watched the movie, did I not almost call out the entire plot of the movie?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to because it's in book form. It's in
I haven't read any of the comic books.
But it's kind of in the public consciousness. We all knew what it was.
I thought it was going to have more to tie in with Doomsayer's Secret Wars. And this is another problem.
That's coming. That's coming.
Yeah, we know, but yeah.
The other problem I had was I felt more threatened by Doom in that little snippet we got of him than when I saw Galactus.
Okay.
And that really bothered me.
Let's talk about that closed scene just for a moment. We see Sue. So let me set the stage. We see Sue reading The Hungry Caterpillar, which is sort of a metaphor for Galactus. to her child. He wants another book. She leaves the room to find it. She comes back into the room, and he's not where she left him. But instead, as she comes around the corner, so to speak, you see him being, and this is open to interpretation, he's somewhat enthralled, or he's paying attention to a figure that is kneeling, in a figure in a green cloak that is turned away from Sue. The question I have is, did he have his mask in his left hand? What was he doing?
Yeah.
He did have his mask removed. Is that correct? So we never get a straight on shot of the character.
The baby was holding it, wasn't it? Wasn't Franklin holding the mask?
I don't know.
I remember seeing the mask.
Think so.
Franklin was touching his face.
Like he was healing it or something.
Okay. So we don't know where it goes from there.
There's another thing I really loved about the movie is Franklin. I loved Franklin. I loved Herbie.
I thought Herbie was cool.
I like how they used. I love how they used Franklin to essentially be a conduit to say, "Hey, he's bringing Sue back to life, or is he? We don't know. We're not going to say anything." But I also thought that the ending of what Sue did with Galactus. If they made Galactus as strong as he should have been, it would have made that moment that much more impactful. But they didn't.
But yeah, that wouldn't have been possible. That moment would not have been possible if it was Galactus as powerful as Galactus should be. That was the one thing that I felt about it, was that they really nerfed Galactus on his cosmic powers.
Yeah.
And that right there was a physical being affected by the physical world, whereas
he's not a conceptual being, only affected by conceptual things,
you could say.
I have a question about what the ultimate fate of Galactus was in this movie. This is my one concern, my one large concern with the movie. We get the fight, we get the Fantastic Four, they're on the ropes. The Surfer comes in and helps to shove Galactus into whatever that is, a black hole, a conduit, whatever. Oh, good. He's gone. He's transported somewhere else. Where? They just sent the most deadly being in the universe
616
somewhere else. And now it's somebody else's problem.
I don't think he went to
So my point is, actually, he wasn't defeated.
They
was
said that he got
somewhere else.
Yeah,
right? he was transported to the edge of the universe.
That's exactly what they said in the movie.
And so now the thing is that, you know, not Doomsday, but Secret Wars will probably bring him back into the fold.
I don't know. What version of Secret Wars do you think they're going to bring?
I don't
know. I'm sure.
An amalgamation of all of them.
I think they're going to adapt the 2015 one.
Yeah, they're not adapting. They're not adapting the 80s one at all. We're gonna have no Beyonder,
like the 80s one,
nothing like that. Oh yeah, it's great. Didn't Reed say when
I think they're
going
to do God Emperor?
Probably. Didn't they say that when? Well, they're certainly doing the 2015 one because they want to merge all these worlds, so that they can bring in Miles Morales and new versions of people they want to recast and all that kind of Doom, you know, the FF and all that stuff. But didn't Reed say when they were originally going to transport the Earth that they were going to go to some place where Galactus couldn't find them for 1,000 years? Like, they're so if he went to the same place, is that supposed to mean that it would take him 1,000 years to get back if, you know, obviously when to come back and take the Earth?
So they have 1,000 years to prepare,
I guess, but.
I, you know, the concept of transporting the Earth in its entirety through a black hole. I mean, it's a comic book plot, and I accept that.
It's very Silver Age.
But it really took me out of the picture. Like, you're kidding. The entire planet. What sun is he going to place it around? What solar system? You know, there were so many questions that my rational mind started to bring up. I was not particularly pleased with that, but for the sake of the movie, you know, okay, let's go forward. And obviously it wasn't going to work, or it was going to get thwarted. And it was thwarted. But
well, that's the problem with writing characters like Reed Richards. Do you explain what he's thinking? And if so, why? And you don't need to. You just kind of got to accept, oh, Reed Richards is the smartest man on the planet.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, he's the smartest man on the planet. Oh, he's saying this and we can do this. All right. Okay. He's enacting this plan. Somehow we're on this train. We're going.
Right.
And you just got to roll with it. You can't argue with it at that point, because what are you going to be able to say against a fictional character who's the smartest man alive?
Just wait.
Robert Downey Jr. is coming, and he thinks he's the smartest man in the room. So we'll see how Doom plays this. Okay, folks, we're coming to the last couple of minutes of this this show. Any final thoughts? I don't want us to get cut off, but we've got about five minutes for final thoughts.
Why don't we go ahead and give it a rating like we did before, 1 to 10, 10 being best, 1 being the worst. Tim, you want to start?
Yeah, I'd give it a solid 7.5 out of 10.
Better than you gave Superman.
Yeah, so I enjoyed it more. If I had to watch one of these again, I'd watch this over Superman.
All right. Okay. Nigel?
I'll give it an 8 for its entertainment value as well. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'd watch it again. Yeah.
Yeah, I too would give it an 8.
Yeah.
Kirk?
I'm going to be pretty close to the same there. I'm going to go for an 8. I enjoyed it. I think rather than put it on a point scale, I think it's going to be a popular movie. I think it's going to be very well received. I think the naysayers are never going to be satisfied. And so it was a good summertime picture, a good romp. I felt good about it. I had a good spirited discussion with my wife as we came home from the theater. even with the problems that we can nitpick, you know, I still enjoyed it for what it was. So a high 8 for me.
Chris?
I'm on like 6.5, 7. Really? I did not. I felt as a lot less
excited about it than the rest of us.
Well, I had less expectations than I did for Superman. And I walked in with a lot less expectations for this movie, which ultimately usually leads to, you know, you enjoying the movie better. But it did exactly the opposite of what I wanted to see from not just the Fantastic Four. It did what I want with the Fantastic Four, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do what I wanted to see with Galactus, and it did the exact opposite of what I wanted to see with how they portray people, the people. And I thought that really took me out of the movie. It made me disappointed, and I didn't care for it that as much.
This coming from my son, who really wants to change the world to a hopeful place. So I can understand that.
So I just like, when you write superhero movies with this kind of level of stakes, you need to show that when we're put in the face of danger, we won't falter. Not in our morals, not in our beliefs. And that's exactly what happened. And I think that's something that we need to change, because a lot of us aren't like that. I don't think there's as many people like that as we want to admit.
We portray. I think what they're trying to portray is that the FF didn't falter in their beliefs, at least certainly not Susan, because she, you know, she's the one who came out and also like they kind of gave her most of the good big speeches. But
yeah.
I think for Joe Public, all they know is, hey, some guy's going to come and destroy the earth and they're scared. So people do irrational things when they're terrified and scared. So that could explain a little bit why they kind of turned on it in that, again, Reed should never open his mouth.
I understand exactly the reasoning. I just think that we need to see one day, one time, a story in which humanity doesn't do that.
Well, I think that the other thing that kind of hit, you know, prevented them from going further on that was the runtime. The runtime. This is one of the shortest Marvel movies made, just like Superman was one of the shortest Superman movies made. And, you know, is it a trend that's going to continue? Because I'm like, I think they, you know, need to spend more time. Now, come to find out, there's over a half an hour worth of footage that wasn't put in the movie. A lot of it was, you know, the opening montage of them, you know, Mole Man and all that stuff. They added a lot. They had a lot more stuff done there. John Malkovich's role as the Red Ghost was completely removed from the movie. You only saw one of the super apes.
But you get to see him in you get to see him in cartoon form at the very end.
Yeah, and that's it. But you know, there's a lot of footage that was left on the floor. Hopefully, we'll get to see it. You know, when it goes, you know, digital or you know, in a what do you call those steelbooks?
You know,
yeah, you'll see it. You'll see it probably on the 4K or on the.
Or it'll show up on YouTube.
I will be watching this movie a lot because I still enjoyed it for what it was worth. But
hey, Chris, have you seen the movie Contact?
Jodie Foster?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Have you seen Signs?
Yes, I have.
Okay. I just wondered if you had seen that, considering your point of view there.
Well, I think one thing this has up on Superman is the opening, and to do it in the talk show format, I thought was pretty brilliant. They're showing those little clips of them being the Fantastic Four. Like, okay, so we get an intro, we get an origin story in 5 minutes. I thought that was much better than the, you know,
dragged
30 years ago, this happened in Superman.
Right.
You know, 3 hours ago, this happened. 3 minutes ago, this happened.
I do have one question, though. How did they, who was the cameraman that was in the middle of the fight between Reed and the Super Ape? Because it's that had to have been Spider-Man being the cameraman.
That would have been, a nice little addition. Maybe it's one of those floating cameras.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's always that possibility now. So, yeah. Well, I mean, so have we covered everything here?
I think so.
About as well as we can.
Yeah, and I think we're fixing to run out of time, so we better wrap this up before we get just cut off.
Well, okay, well, you know, I'll go ahead and give them the other things. If you want to talk to us about this, write us at the Third Degree Burn Facebook group, or you can write us at our email address, which is gottagetburned@gmail.com, burned spelled B-Y-R-N-E-D. Or you can, you know, give us a review on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes. We'd really, really love to hear you. Just let us know what you think. Is there anything anybody else wants to bring up before we go?
Well, I'm going to ask Nigel real quick. Did you get a Thunderbirds vibe from the Excelsior? That rocket ship?
Yeah. It was kind of, that sort of style.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of cool.
Thunderbird 3-ish. What was that? What kind of style? Yeah.
Thunderbirds.
Thunderbird 3.
Oh, Thunderbirds, yeah.
It was a bit more sort of sleek and,
right.
Streamlined, but yeah, the basic shape. Mm.
All right, well. With all that being said, I think that we're good to go on now. So for Third Degree Burn, let's say goodbye to Tim. Say goodbye, Tim.
Goodbye.
Nigel Spink.
Hey, goodbye.
Kurt Greenfield.
Good night.
Christopher Hughes.
Goodbye, everybody.
And I'll say adios. Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow. God, that was like Weekend Update.
It's clobbering time.
It's clobbering time.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.